Okay, it seems like we have counsel ready for our next case. That case is Peterson versus Gannett Company. And Mr. O'Brien, we look forward to hearing from you.
Good morning, Justices Gilman, Bress, and Van Dyke. I represent the appellant, Jeffrey Peterson. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court. The First Amendment was never intended to protect a news article of the sort we're seeing in this case. Consequently, the plaintiff is asking this court to examine four issues. Number one, when the alleged false and defamatory article was published, was plaintiff appellant Peterson a limited purpose public figure? Number two, is the question of status as limited purpose public figure properly a question of law or a question of fact? Number three, if the appellant is a public figure, has the appellant demonstrated that the defendants published the subject news article with knowledge that it was false or with reckless disregard of whether it was false or not? Number four, if the plaintiff appellant is not a public figure, has the plaintiff successfully pled a case under the negligence standard? When the subject article was published, the plaintiff appellant Peterson was not a limited purpose public figure. And for that, I cite Gertz v. Welch, that Peterson did not, quote, thrust himself into the forefront of a particular controversy in order to influence the resolution of the issues involved. The plaintiff is not an individual who deliberately shapes debate on particular public issues or one who uses the media to influence that debate. Additionally, the fame and fortune of the plaintiff appellant was fleeting, and this circuit hasn't weighed in on whether an individual's status as public figure can change over time. The Bugliosi court did say, however, that, quote, defining public figure is much like trying to nail a jellyfish to the wall. And I cite Parkington versus Bugliosi, Ninth Circuit, 1995. In the facts of this case,
the district court essentially took certain allegations in your client's complaint and said, you know, when you look at these, he was a limited purpose public figure for the purpose of the business enterprise he was operating, which was one of some public notoriety and involved as advisors, various well-known public figures. How do you respond?
I don't think, taken what the plaintiff pled, that you could extrapolate that and come up with a conclusion that he was a limited purpose public figure. I think that the facts should be examined, but not his opinion thereof.
Counsel, you agree. I think our case law said anyone who's famous or infamous because of who he is or what he's done. So if your client is famous or infamous because of what he's done or who he is in the business world, would you agree that would make him a limited public figure?
It would, but the second prong of what you just stated, he's no longer well known in the business world. In other words, his fame and fortune was fleeting. So I don't believe this circuit has taken up that question. Is that, does that remain intact or can time wash it away?
So do I understand correctly? You're saying he was at one time a limited purpose public figure, but is no longer.
Right. But that the story, the article in question published by the Arizona Republic, doesn't go into his fame and fortune of long ago. It goes into the question of his alleged, let's say, corruption or whatever word you want to use. But it goes into what happened recently at the Mobile Corporation. It doesn't even touch on what happened, you might say, back in the day.
Right, but there was allegations of an interconnection between mobile.com and his prior company, which was what called Pasa.com.
Yes, Judge Gilman, it was K-PASA was the early corporation that was a great success.
Right, and he was way for this Mobile. He was raising millions of dollars from well-known personalities, right, including this Burke, who was the former Attorney General of Arizona.
Yes, that may be true, but I don't think that their status as being well-known and famous would necessarily rub off onto Mr. Peterson.
Well, I'm not sure he was, by his own allegations, I'm not sure he was a passive participant in a relationship with people with public figures. I mean, those people were public figures, perhaps even not just limited purpose ones, but full-fledged public figures, and he was associating with himself with them in a very prominent way for the purpose of his business. And the articles that we're talking about are about his business.
I agree with you on that. However, I don't think that that makes him himself a limited purpose public figure.
What is your best case for your proposition that if you're a has-been entrepreneur, that you're no longer be a limited purpose public figure?
Judge Gilman, would you say that again? I had trouble hearing you.
What case can you cite us for your proposition that if he's a has-been, that removes him from the possibility of being a limited purpose public figure?
Judge, I don't have a case. I want to say that this circuit hasn't taken up that question, and perhaps this is the time. In other words, is a limited purpose public figure, is that something that endures through the person's entire life, or is it fleeting and perhaps can dissipate over time?
Well, counsel, under your theory of that it kind of goes away, is your position that even if what you're talking about is partially related to what made them a limited public figure in the past, that now that there has been, that is no longer, they're not, even if you're talking about the past stuff, at least in part, that doesn't count? Or is that sort of always fair? Is that always subject to the malice standard since they were a limited public figure under your theory back then? So is talking about the past stuff always going to be subject to the malice standard, or do you think that goes away because they're no longer a limited public figure in their current life?
I think that goes away, but in this particular case, there's a trump card. Now, we've made allegations that the Arizona Republic would print whatever certain politicians told them to print. So if that's true, and we will have the ability to prove that at trial, then that applies to the second prong. In other words, if you're handed something to publish, irrespective of whether it's true or not, and you have a deal with these politicians to publish it, then certainly that's the second prong of the malice standard, that they don't care if it's true or not.
Do I understand correctly that under your theory, these politicians that supposedly could get the Arizona.com or whatever to publish, they had a relationship with him precisely because of his past life, isn't that? And now that relationship had broken down.
Well, we wouldn't know the answer to that question until we get to the discovery phase, because we're alleging that relationship between the politicians and the publication endured. Now, we won't know till trial or perhaps.
Counsel, I'm asking a different question. Those same politicians, I understand, had a relationship with him in the past, correct? You dispute that? They had a relationship with him in the past. During this period of time that you're saying he was a limited public figure. So it's, again, it seems to tie, why does that not tie this whole controversy to that past time that you're conceding when he was a limited public figure?
I think the linkage goes out the window with the passage of time. That's primarily why they turned on him, is because he was no longer a member of the political club.
How many years was it between the time he was active with this K-PASS, ASA, and the new venture Mobile? Are we talking about 10 years, 20 years, 2 years?
Judge Gilman, I believe it was at least 10. I don't have that in front of me, but if you want a memo that I can answer that, I'll answer it for you. But It was a substantial number of years. I can fairly say that.
He obviously still had apparently enough connections with these other people to raise millions of dollars for the new venture, didn't he?
Well, that that bears on his past success as a businessman, but to say that he's the same public person, for limited purpose public person, as he was then, he still is, that's a stretch that I don't think we can make.
Well, you know, another stretch, I'm wondering, let's assume that you're right, that the Arizona Republic would publish whatever Burke, say, wanted it to publish. Where does it follow that, oh, that means that Burke's, anything that, that Burke would publish false things? I mean, what would cause Gannett to know that, you know, the fact that it would put in an article that Burke wanted would be false? Is there any basis for that presumption?
Well, we don't know exactly, but just as the argument that Mr. Peterson was once a well-known, famous, very connected. Now, but there's also in our complaint, Mr. Burke, and I don't want to cast any disparaging comments on the gentleman, but he was censured by the Arizona Bar for being less than truthful with the authorities. That's in the complaint. So a red flag should have gone up at the Arizona Republic to look deeper into his allegations. However, if he was still a member of the political club, let's call it club for lack of a better word, then they'd publish it anyway, or so we allege in the complaint, and we're ready to prove that.
So do you acknowledge that at some point in Mr. Peterson's career, he was a limited public figure for something?
He was when KPASA was a great success, and he was heavily connected to the Arizona Democrats, but those days went out the window. It's like in politics, they say, well, what have you done for me lately? Well, lately he hasn't done anything for him. He ran out of money, so he's not a member of the club anymore.
I guess it's, I'm just not sure, at what point do you think his status shut off?
When his money ran out and they stopped going to him for money and favors, he was no longer a member of the club. And I think at that point, not that I could pin a certain date to it, but at that point, he was no longer a limited public, limited purpose public figure.
You know, you say that in the complaint itself, he describes himself as a well-known technology entrepreneur. That's what he's saying in the complaint.
Well, Judge Gilman, it wouldn't make any difference what he sees when he looks in the mirror. I think that's a question that you should look at the facts, not at what Mr. Peterson says. In other words, when he pled
we have to look at what he pled.
But I know what he pled, but it didn't lock him into the position of public figure.
I mean, I'm just saying he didn't perceive himself as a has-been.
I'm not so sure exactly, but I don't think that the way it was pled that he can lock himself in.
Isn't the notion that he's a has-been sort of inconsistent with the whole reason, I would imagine, he wants to bring this lawsuit, which is that he believes his public reputation and his ability to be a businessman matters? If he was just simply a private citizen who had gone out of this community and this world, he presumably wouldn't be nearly as injured by this.
Well, in the internet day and age, all you have to do is go to the Google search engine, put in his name, just his name, and these disparaging comments about which this case is centered, things that appeared in the Arizona Republic, will come up. The fourth search down or the fifth search down, but the internet age, I think, has skewed everything that we formerly used as case law, because the Arizona Republic is just one small publication in the vast world of newspapers, but now if you Google his name, up comes the article of which we speak right now.
I know you wanted to reserve some time for rebuttal. We'll leave you 2 minutes when you come back after we hear from your friend on the other side.
Thank you.
Mr. Alano.
Hi, Good morning, Your Honors. Daniel Arellano of Ballard Spahr for Defendants Gannett Company, Inc. and Phoenix Newspapers, Inc. Your Honors, I want to begin with two procedural first principles that I think in large part guide resolution of this case. The first is the plaintiff is the master of his complaint. He can allege whatever he wants to allege in his complaint and is free to do so however he wants. The second is that in resolving a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss, the court must take as true the well-pled factual allegations in that complaint. And contrary to what Mr. Peterson argues now in appeal, that he is not bound by his opinion of himself, he is bound by his well-pled factual allegations about himself. And those factual allegations include, most prominently, that he is, present tense, is a well-known technology entrepreneur. Not that he was one long ago, not that he was one until he fell out of favor, but rather that he is a well-known technology entrepreneur. And so applying those procedural lodestars here compels the conclusion that Mr. Peterson is a limited purpose public figure who bears a burden under the First Amendment, both to prove falsity and by clear and convincing evidence, actual malice. And at the pleading stage, that means that he must at a minimum allege facts from which an inference of actual malice can be drawn. Mr. Peterson has now tried to plead his case four times. He pleaded three times before this case was transferred to the District of Arizona, at which point the defendants now on appeal moved to dismiss under Rule 12b6. And I should note that in each of those pleadings, Mr. Peterson kept these allegations in there about his prominence, about all his prominent connections, about his reputation internationally, about him knowing the president's family of Mexico, about him knowing presidents here in the United States. Those were all in there every single time. And in response to the filing of a second amended complaint, these defendants moved to dismiss, and the district court ruled in response to that motion that Mr. Peterson was a limited purpose public figure, identifying very specifically in the record those items of Mr. Peterson's factual allegations on which it was relying to reach that conclusion. And yet at the end of that ruling, the district court, rather magnanimously, we think, granted Mr. Peterson yet one more leave to amend, just in case there was anything there he could salvage. And I should note that that leave to amend was not limited to any particular issue. It was not restricted as to what he could or couldn't amend. It was a blanket leave to amend. So Mr. Peterson then came back a fourth time with the third amended complaint and kept verbatim every single one of those allegations, attesting, really boasting to his fame in the business world and the prominence of his connections, both nationally and internationally. And so, in light of those allegations, we moved to dismiss again, and again raised the issue for the court that Mr. Peterson was a limited purpose public figure. Mr. Peterson responded to that motion in opposition and did not address the public figure issue at all. So he waived it before the district court. The district court proceeded to conclude again that he was a limited purpose public figure. And Mr. Peterson now appeals, attempting to argue, as we understand it, two things. One, that he is not bound by his pleadings, which I think is just procedurally a non-starter. And two, that even if he was a limited purpose public figure in the past, he isn't one now. And I think that contention is belied by his own pleadings, which again are framed in the present tense. And two, are immaterial, again, because he has waived the issue entirely by not having addressed it sufficiently before the district court. Your Honor, and even if Mr. Peterson had...
Counsel, did I hear you correctly that you said that he waived it in front of whether he was a limited public figure in the district court?
Correct, Your Honor, yes.
Did the district court find that he waived it, or...?
The district court didn't make an explicit finding of waiver, I think, but rather just proceeded with its conclusion that it had already made in its prior order that he was a limited
public figure. The district court addressed it, right? I mean, the district court sort of analyzed it and concluded he was, right? Based on his...
In resolving the dismissal of the second amended complaint, yes.
Are you wanting us to find waiver where the district court didn't? Or?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part of your question.
Are you wanting us to find waiver where the district court did not find it?
Well, I'm asking you to find two things, Your Honor. One is, yes, waiver. I mean, because again, the district court didn't say, yes, you've waived it, but it didn't need to, because it just said, okay, you're a limited purpose public figure. Clearly you have no contention with this because you just replied these allegations again. The court didn't need to go through those conclusions the second time when it was resolving the third amendment.
Right. He didn't, I mean, looking at it now, he didn't use the word waiver, but he did say, he had already addressed this at length in the second amended complaint, the order on the second amended complaint, and the plaintiff didn't really adjust his position on that. And so the district court said that the plaintiff doesn't dispute in responding to the pending motion to dismiss that he's a limited public figure. And that seems to be what caused the district court to just move forward with the rest of the analysis.
I think that's exactly right, Judge Bress. I mean, again, the court didn't explicitly use the word waiver, but it didn't need to, because what it had before it were literally the exact same allegations that led it to conclude the first time that he was a limited purpose public figure. So I think both by Mr. Peterson's failure to address it in response to the motion to dismiss, and also by re-including those allegations verbatim, which really weren't necessary to his complaint. They're just him kind of boasting about himself.
Why don't you address your friend on the other side's point that his limited public figure status essentially dissipated or ended and at the point in which the article was written, and the events about the article were, he was more of a private citizen, if you will.
Sure. So to that, I'll say two things, Your Honor. The first is, I think it's unnecessary to resolve that issue because of the waiver problems, and also because of the actual malice problems that I'll get to in a minute. But second, I'll note that this is not a case where we're dealing with someone's, you know, youthful indiscretions that made them famous 50 years ago. And, you know, there's a question of whether it might be unfair to hold them to that now. Judge Gilman, I believe you asked a question earlier. What's the amount of time we're dealing with here? We're dealing with at most a time span of 20 years. You know, Mr. Peterson started KPOS, I believe it was 1997. So we're talking the late 90s at the earliest. The article was published in late 2017. So we're talking a time span of, again, at most 20 years, really largely within the last 10 years preceding the article, because that's when you have the dealings regarding with the mobile corporation, Intro 123, and all these
other things. Even that seems favorable. I mean, I thought it was basically 2013 to 2016 was the kind of the key time period in which mobile was raising money.
Right, right. And again, I'm stating this as generously as I can in terms of like the maximum timeline here. Really, as to DeBress's point, I mean, the timeline is really even more compressed than that. I mean, again, largely at most of the preceding 10 years, but really within the preceding few years before the article talking. So we're not talking, you know, something that happened long ago that everybody forgot. And to the merits of the limited purpose public figure question, I mean, to the extent that wasn't waived, you know, we address this in the context of a limited purpose public figure. And Mr. Peterson says, no, well, not everyone in America knows who I am. I'm not that famous, and really no one's ever heard of me. That's all outside the pleadings argument. If you look at the pleadings itself and limit yourself to the four corners of the pleadings, he comes pretty darn near close to alleging himself almost as a general purpose public figure. I mean, everybody knows who he is. He's a well-known technology entrepreneur. He goes to a party and runs into Chelsea Clinton, who knows who he is and tells him, hey, you know, Dennis Burke and all these other people are saying, you know, these untrue things about you. He meets Bill Clinton at another event with whom he shares all these mutual connections. He knows all these international celebrities who invest in his business. I mean, he comes pretty darn near close to, you know, general purpose public figure, which we didn't argue because I don't think we needed to. But I think it's pretty clear on this record, as Mr. Peterson has pleaded, that he is at a minimum a limited purpose public figure. And again, even if he hadn't waived that issue, I think the merits, I think, pretty clearly compel the result that he is. And he also failed to allege actual malice. One of his other contenders on appeal is that the district court should have looked at the article as a whole rather than individually. And this again goes back to the way in which Mr. Peterson decided to plead his complaint. Rather than alleging any defamatory sting from the article as a whole, he goes through, with respect to defamation, at least roughly half a dozen statements in isolation, and goes through and tries to explain why each one is defamatory on its own. And as to those statements, I think he both fails to allege actual malice, and also I think even as a matter of common law, he fails to allege basic falsity. You know, some of the things with which he takes issue were, you know, the article says that he is a high school dropout. And he says, no, I wasn't a high school dropout because I left high school with my parents' permission. And it's like, okay, that's, you're still a dropout. As that term is commonly understood, there's another point in there about the article said that those $9 million that were gone from the company. And he said, no, it wasn't gone because that implies theft. Rather, it was all spent in its entirety on these other things. The point remains that it's gone. So in each of these individual instances, he's failed to allege actual malice. He's failed to allege basic falsity. We think it was rather generous for the district court to have granted leave to amend in the first place when it dismissed the second amended complaint. And so certainly I think it was correct in concluding that Mr. Peterson had failed to state a claim on the third amended complaint and that it was appropriate to dismiss the complaint with prejudice at that juncture. And unless the court has any further questions, I would conclude by noting that this court should affirm the district court for those reasons.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Arellano. Mr. O'Brien. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. The ruling on appeal is based on the false premise that the plaintiff is a limited purpose public figure. He isn't. But even if he were, the First Amendment isn't designed to protect the journalism around which this case revolves, which brings us back to the law or fact question concerning the designation public figure. In the case at hand, that's a question for the jury, as is the rest of the case, because what if it's true? The Arizona Republic, quote, will print whatever we tell them to, unquote. I'm taking that from the complaint. And if this isn't callous disregard concerning fact or fiction, then what is? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. I want to thank you for your argument. I want to thank Mr. Arellano for his argument. The case is submitted. It also concludes our calendar for this morning. We'll stand in recess until tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All rise.